ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Tracy Swedlow, CEO and founder of TMRW Corp and EIC of Interactive TV Today, which she founded in early 1998. Tracy is also the executive producer of the TV of Tomorrow show conferences held in San Francisco and New York City. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So let's begin with a little bit of background. I think it's pretty safe to say that you're a bit of a veteran in TV and entertainment space. Can you tell me about how you got to where you are today, just Cliff Notes version?
I was doing a PhD at Berkeley in directing out here in the Bay Area, and I had always been interested in science and technology, you know, and futurism, you know, tomorrowism. But then in the early 90s, living in San Francisco, you couldn't help be exposed to the origins of the internet. And I had this instinct, you know, that TV would probably be made digital as well. You know, it just seemed logical. So I was working in a post-production industrial film facility here in town. And I became eventually a producer and learned about that. And I was exposed to the world of virtual reality, actually, because it was all, you know, happening, as that movie says, you know, Almost Famous, in the early 90s. And it's a long story how I found out about that and how I got to an event called Cyber Arts. It was in Pasadena. But those 3 days at Cyber Arts really changed my entire life. So I went from being this sort of directing theater person doing Greek theater, you know, for the millionth time, into being completely obsessed with the internet, with virtual reality, the potential of storytelling in a digital medium. And I got very deeply involved in that universe with those people and became a journalist, because you couldn't really do anything in tech at that time if you were a liberal arts major. There weren't any jobs. No opportunity. So in order to meet people and find out what was going on, you had to become a journalist. It's the biggest scam, right? You get into conferences for free. It's so fantastic. And I'm still doing it today. So long story, you know, VR, you know, went up, then it went down. And I got deeply involved in studying television, of course. I always had loved television. I used to measure my life according to how many hours of television I watched as a kid, how many new movies I saw, how much TV I saw. I used to really be interested in discovering new stars. I think I'm giving you too much meta here. But so that long story, jumping ahead, I started being a journalist, got jobs, worked in Silicon Valley, at Apple, a million other places, started becoming kind of expert, or I hate to use that word, but, you know, knowledgeable, right, about new media, as we called it back then. And I was always following all of these topics. Got a job at PC World as new media editor. And then eventually I could see that, you know, interactive TV was going to happen. And I thought, well, I'll start a publication, because that's the way I'll know more about it. I'll draw that information to me. And I won't go into the whole story about how all that happened, but I did. In fact, I called 10 people randomly at different companies that I thought were relevant. Would you like to subscribe to ITVT? Actually, we were called Jet Planet at that point, way back in the beginning. But I quickly switched to a completely abstract acronym like ITVT. But anyway, and here we are. And then in doing the newsletter, making its website, learning how to use all the tools that came out through Silicon Valley. And I started the conference, the TV of Tomorrow show, in 2007. The year I was pregnant with my first child. And I had nothing else to do. Don't try to produce your very first conference when you are pregnant. It is a stressful experience. And anyway, I got through it. So here we are. And we've produced ITVT now since 1998, which is when I actually started the company. And the conference, TVOT, has been going strong for 12 years. So we're like in our 15th or 16th year, 12 years of the event. Here we are.
Wow, that's amazing. So looking at how the industry has evolved, because it hasn't really been a straight line. And I know for a very long time, people, you know, talked a lot around convergence of telecom and entertainment and media. And it seemed like it didn't happen. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. And then, oh my God, it already happened. How did it not pan out the way you thought it would? I mean, like, what didn't happen the way you thought? Is there anything, or did it really fall into place the way you thought it would?
I think that's a great question. I love that question. You know, in the mid-90s, when we were studying interactive TV, or the ideas, and we had come from different experiments that, you know, that had shown you that you could interact with content, like Cube in Columbus, Ohio, my hometown originally, or FSN, which is Full Service Network, and Web TV, of course, there were all these experiments where you were going to interact with the content itself. You could order, you could do things on demand, and all of those things were happening at Cube in the late 70s, actually. You know, you could do that. But people really felt that content on a television could be interacted with, that you could do something like choose your own adventure, or you could, you know, talk back to the person on the screen. There was another experiment called 21st Century Vaudeville that we were involved in here in San Francisco for a long time, my husband and I, where you were talking yourself on a telephone with another character on a screen, on a TV screen. So interactive TV was completely, content, interactive content. But now, of course, we're still struggling with projects that are interactive, with content that's interactive. It's really about, can I get my show when I want it? Can I navigate to the best, you know, app that I want? Can I open this TV show? And then it's all about, you know, what they call discovery and personalization. And, you know, is Twitter working with, you know, there are so many ways to interact with the content, but it's never really the content itself. It's always adjacent to it, or a tool to get to the content. I think Soderbergh just put something out called Matrix. I think it was Soderbergh, where you are interacting, but these projects occur in fits and starts. And of course, Netflix did buy the license to Choose Your Own Adventure, and they are experimenting with that kind of on the platform in any sort of hidden way. So it's happening a little bit, but not enough. And I think there's a whole community of people who I deal with in our conferences, you know, who've always been looking towards that future of real interactive video television content. We're still waiting.
It's almost like that's a sort of a different type of entertainment experience, isn't it? I mean, it seems like when I also think about VR and how people talk about VR, personally, I always think of it as it's a different kind of experience, the way, because it occludes everything else. Whereas so many times the way people experience, let's say, traditional television, even if it's not viewed through a television box, you know, they've got second screen going. They're not as engaged as, let's say, if you go to the theater to see a film.
I think you bring up a great point, right? VR, which is how I started. And, you know, because VR is a completely immersive, interactive experience. And we do look at VR at TVOT and ITVT as a form of television entertainment, screened entertainment. So in some ways, I'm refuting the comment that I just made, because VR is interactive television. It's immersive interactive television. However, and because it contains you, you are completely focused, but in a regular sort of 2D, watching in your living room or on a device experience, you can be easily distracted. You've got other devices, you know. And so people, for some reason, the medium of interactive TV on a big screen or on your device when you just want to watch a show hasn't really emerged. Now, there is the occasional company like Echo, EKO, which was founded by this really great guy called Yoni Block. He is constantly experimenting with new forms of interactive TV, and I highly recommend you checking them out. They're going to be at our show in June. He has the dream, and he's been pushing forward on it. He's not giving up.
Had you at all predicted the way that social platforms would first emerge, and then once they emerged, the impact of that network effect, and really these are the discovery channels now for content. Was there anything about the emergence of social that surprised you?
Some innovators have surprised me. The existence of Twitter feed wrapped around a show, not have, you know, it's potentially necessary. People want to chat. I mean, chatting with your show is something we've all been doing, you know, for decades, right? Since television was invented. I suppose I've not been surprised about that, but I've been surprised that people haven't embraced certain ideas that I think are an obvious. Now, that being said, I would say that the new show, HQ, which is another type of interactive TV, has emerged on a social platform, right on your phone, and you can chat along at the same time at the same while you're playing a trivia game. And they're a huge phenomenon. So that is an actual form of interactive TV. I don't think people realize that that type of social interaction is a form of interactive TV, but it is. I would say that social has not taken advantage of interacting with the content as much as it could. And yet social is being used as a massive way to understand how people watch content, what they think about it. So the data that is being extracted from Twitter, from Facebook, from all social platforms is enormous. It is a gold mine. So I don't think anybody had a clue when social first emerged that it would become this river of green, the data. You know, it really is. And of course, look at what's going on with Facebook. But data and TV are just like, you know.
Faustian bargain, though, right? I mean, you know, what people are trading and do they understand what they're trading? But switching gears just a little bit, your company, TMRW Corp, and the mission, it said, is to create high quality experiences and services that push the world into tomorrow. What are you currently doing that makes that mission happen?
Well, you know, we always try to uncover the most interesting companies who are being innovative, or innovative, as my English husband would say, to point them out to, you know, to everybody in the community. So that means that the traditional community, you know, doing just regular linear television, is exposed to what, you know, some kid or an adult is doing, you know, in, I don't know, some other country if we discover them. So we try to raise the profile of various content creators or technologists or marketers that we think are very innovative and bring them inside ITVT, whether I interview them myself or to the event, the conference, and we put them together in unusual ways and create those conversations. Now, you know, I do try to create an environment where people feel that they can really speak, you know, openly, and we try to create a high quality of experience so that people feel free and that it's not just marketing in any way. And so I hope that the sort of mixture of people, the party that we create, the unusual people that we invite, creates a situation where people start making those business relationships and those alliances that we feel, you know, are going to move things forward. And you know, like I've seen some incredible people meeting in the hallways, like people who are very left-wing with people who are very right-wing, you know, in politics. Last year in June, you know, we had the Young Turks and left-wing politics people and, you know, various organizations that are more conservative. We also invite some of the most amazing interface user experience people who are really pushing the medium forward. I mean, there's a million different things that we're doing.
Is most of what the company does really in aid of supporting the conference, would you say? Or does it have a mission separate from what's going on with the conference? And also, how do you identify and find these people? Do people say, yoo-hoo, you should meet this person? I mean, do they come to you? Are they referred to you? Or how are you searching them out?
Well, because we've been studying the space, you know, I've been studying it since the early 90s, and we still cover it through ITVT. You know, we are either exposed to it because of our own interests. We do a huge amount of research on a daily and nightly basis using all the available tools that are out there. We have our own interests and we search them out. You know, we look for things on YouTube and we know what's going on in the industry because we're watching what's happening with AI, what's happening with monetization, what's happening with personalization. I mentioned interactive content or VR. And then, you know, we've developed so many friends, colleagues in this business. People contact us. They say, we'd like to speak. Somebody will call me and tell me stuff, you know, off the record. You know, so there's a huge amount of what I call dialoguing that goes on, where we do a lot of research before the conference. And we really try very hard not to copy any other conferences out there. We try to be as original as we can based on our own instincts. I mean, to some extent, you know, because I came from directing, I feel like I'm directing a community of people you know, to some extent, producing or directing them and creating a stage or an experience so that they can communicate, which is essentially like theater. You know, you're telling a story with people.
I have to say, your conference, one of the things that is very different about your conference is that everybody who participates in it stays and talks and is interested in what everybody else is saying and talking about. I mean, it really, so many conferences you go to, people show up, do their bit, and leave, and aren't, and there's a real divide between the people on the stage and the people in the audience. Whereas at your conference, what you really have are interesting people taking turns, sharing what they're doing. And then really those lunches when you just sit down and meet other people, and it's fascinating. I think it's truly one of the best conferences.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to create. I mean, the idea that people could make alliances in different groups of people, you know, car companies with advertising and, you know, some artists that I've invited in who I think is amazing and cool and doing interesting things, but you would never have heard about them in a million years, talking, meeting with a broadcaster or, you know, some unusual periscoper or live streamer doing, you know, interesting stuff, then introducing them over to Turner because they're doing Turner Classic Movie. You know, I love introducing people. I love creating that context where people really are excited to see each other. There is a certain component of people who are veterans in the industry who are just happy to be there, a little bit of family reunion going on, you know, every year. And then I like to surprise them with people that they didn't even know existed. So I hope everybody has a great experience. I mean, like I'll just add that when I mentioned cyber arts in the early 90s, I had such a great experience. I think that had a huge impact on me. And I want people to come out of our conference to have seen a little bit of art, potentially sitting in a corner somewhere, you know, but feel like they're really meeting people and able to move their own business agenda forward, or something has inspired them in a new way. And, you know, as a kid, I always had this weird feeling that someday I would be involved in some kind of community, some kind of media community, helping it. Isn't that weird?
That is. Well, and it worked out. You also put together these hackathons. And traditionally, when I think about hackathons, it's usually to solve a very specific problem. But it seems like your hackathons are a bit more open-ended. I mean, can you explain, because I may have misunderstood when I was looking at the materials, can you explain what your hackathons are?
Our hackathons started when, you know, there was hackathons were happening. I thought, oh, you know, we should do this. This is exciting. And my goal was to pair TV broadcasters, you know, and technologists, because there weren't any hackathons like that at the time. And I just thought it'd be interesting. And since then, some more of those have evolved, but those have remained in-house. Those companies, those big broadcasters, they want to own everything, you know, and keep it in-house, whatever's developed. At the time when I was doing those, and we might be doing another one, we required that it be open and shared and that the IP would remain in the hands of the hackers, of the coders. And, you know, some broadcasters, like National Geographic at the time, participated, and a lot of technology companies. And so it wasn't so much that it was open-ended, but there were a lot of possibilities. What can you do to create an interactive app with this piece of content that, for example, Nat Geo gave us? They gave us a couple of shows that hadn't launched yet. Or, you know, somebody brought Leap Motion, you know, which is a big deal, sort of hand, you know, motion VR company 3D thing now. They hadn't even launched yet and they participated. Or we had Gracenote, who did a lot of metadata. So there was a lot of cross-pollination, and we had all kinds of people. We had people from the broadcasters, from technology companies. We had students. We had coders coming in from Silicon Valley. We had a father and daughter. And it's so funny because I just ran into this guy he was there with his daughter, and they had done extremely well, and they got approached. I don't think I'm allowed to say, but they got approached by a company and were able to develop certain things that they had developed as a hack at our show. And he told me that they had the most marvelous experience. And so, you know, and it inspired them to move on into other things. I guess they got into robotics. So it doesn't matter. It was so exciting. It was so exciting to see people busy. And then I did also one of those hackathons. I brought in directors, award-winning directors. you know, I think there's still more to be done.
Well, it's interesting, the cross-pollination that happens, but you really do have to be open and trusting and not controlling everything. And I think as these companies start thinking, oh, there might be real monetary possibilities, they really want to lock it up. And by locking it up, you know, the creative energies aren't going to be shared.
Well, it was weird. My first year, we were doing it at a facility here where TV had been invented in San Francisco by Philo Farnsworth in 1929. And so I was, you know, completely open-minded. I just stuck that in because he's one of my heroes. But anyway, then one broadcaster who I will not name just was absolutely emphatic that they wouldn't participate unless they owned everything. And I talked to the coders. It was my first year doing it. And they're like, no, I don't want to participate if that's the case. And I just felt that it's important.
Well, it seems culturally that that goes against what you're trying to do. I mean, I suppose if they want to do that, then they need to sponsor their own thing. And good luck to you, you know.
I'm happy to do that out there if anybody wants to do a closed hackathon, but you have to sponsor it yourself. You have to completely own that. You know, it can't be an open forum.
Exactly, exactly. So I know we did touch on the conference a little bit, but it's coming up in June. Is there anything, any surprises that you want to leak out to us that might be on the horizon?
Surprises. Well, we've got some, not some, but everybody's really interesting. You know, we're doing a whole big section on ATSC 3.0, an acronym that most people probably don't know what that is. And that is a new technology that the government is behind, and it is going to completely transform local television from being just delivered linearly to becoming an on-demand OTT, you know, delivered to your app platform, interactive experience.
Well, that's, we actually just had the CEO of Edge Spectrum on talking about that exact thing, as a matter of fact.
Okay, great. Well, very, very nice. So, we're going to be doing, like I would say, at least three sessions on ATSC. We have really some of the movers and shakers in New York. Last New York, we have the guy in charge of the whole project. We're also going to be doing a whole thing on blockchain. Blockchain is going to be very important.
I was going to ask you, that was my next, you've jumped ahead to my next question. I wanted to ask you about your thoughts around blockchain and disintermediation. And I my specific question, as we're seeing what's happened with the Facebook Cambridge Analytics, is looking ahead at blockchain and anticipating if we need to think about bad actors and how people might misuse blockchain, and so we can protect against things. Or if that's not, you don't think that's a risk?
I guess, you know, I am not the super expert on blockchain. So we're interested in how blockchain will be used with programmatic advertising, you know, buying and transactions and things like that, because that's what this community is interested in. But I think data collection and blockchain and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot of potential. But I've also heard that blockchain slows down the process a lot. And so there's still a lot to be done. Whether or not it'll be used to really protect people and their data in this environment, you know, we're so on the beginning stages of that. I would say come and see the session on blockchain and ask those guys, because they're more in the weeds. We're trying to make sure that we know that they know what they're talking about, and we provide the right context, and we ask them so we know how to frame the session. But blockchain is so new that there are a lot of open questions.
Right. What do you think will be the single most, or what, you know, we've talked about a lot of disruptive things happening, but what do you anticipate is, in the short term, going to be the most disruptive force that you feel?
Disruptive. Well, AI, of course, is completely, it has introduced itself to the TV universe. So we see a lot of use of AI to influence content. There's a company called Canvas, for example, that watches what people say in social media, analyzes it, and then spits that back really on like a daily or weekly basis to the content creators in Hollywood, so that they can get a sense of whether they like this scene or that character or that moment. So I think that's going to be very disruptive or influential.
That's sort of sad, I have to say. I really, the idea that, oh, I don't know, I like to think of some creation being of the artist, of the creator, and not a feedback loop, I guess. As an artist myself, I just think that I don't know. That sort of depresses me.
No, I hear you. I'm not advocating either way. We just study this. So my guess is there are probably a lot of content creators that will either, you know, not embrace that technology, or the marketing people will use it for promotion. We're going to be doing a whole session on the evolution of how people are marketing long tail content, for example. You know, so you're not just watching your show the first time, but you might watch it 2 years later, or you might come to season one while they're already on season four. I mean, AI is going to be used for all number of things. My guess is that a true, really talented content creator will stick to their instincts, you know, that way they can't be copied. So I don't know. I think it will be disruptive, but I don't know to what extent. And commerce. Oh, we forgot commerce and voice assistants. I mean, all of these platforms that have the ability to buy things. And oh my God, this it's an exploding market. Voice control is going to disrupt.
Well, I think that absolutely voice as UI UX is, you know, it's happening, I think, faster than anyone will anticipate, for sure. And I think generationally speaking, what I see is Gen Z and younger being incredibly comfortable with voice. And that's where they're going, you know, initially, and they're already employing
it. My daughter will sit in front of the TV and she'll have conversations and try to throw, you know, the voice control system.
Yeah, exactly. And so she's probably just about the right age, because she's what, 11?
Yeah, almost.
So, you know, you've got, this is where it's headed for sure. And the learning is just speeding up. And I know that that was one of the things at last year's conference, which really interested me. There was a panel and you had the UX person from TiVo and the voice guy from THX, I think. And that was really, and nobody at that point, most of my clients are cable and broadcast and other entertainment brands. People weren't talking about voice yet. And I started asking about voice. And now it's just now coming up in conversations with people. It's interesting. I think you're ahead of the curve in a really interesting way.
Oh, well, thanks. The people who are inventing this stuff are ahead of the curve. But I think there's so much opportunity to disrupt, or, you know, to create interesting interactions. Just like that project I mentioned that I did with my husband here with some other people called 21st Century Vaudeville, it was all about talking. I mean, talking is interactive, right? It's the most pure form of interactivity. So if people don't pick up on that, if they don't start exploring that, they're going to be behind the eight ball a lot.
Right. And last question is, what are you watching?
I watch a lot of YouTube stars doing interesting stuff. I've been watching Mike Chen, who I'm going to be interviewing very soon. I just finished watching Cosmos again for the second time. I watched a really intense, terrible video on Netflix called Obesity. They did a postmortem on an obese woman. That was very, very intense. Yeah. What else? I don't know. Happy stuff. I watch a huge amount of political news on the web constantly. Huge amount of political television, alternative media constantly. I also watch, you know, stuff on regular television and Diginets and regular shows. I'm trying to get through the third season of Better Call Saul. I could keep going on. I watch way too much television.
That's good. You're in your industry.
Yeah, I know. I'm in the industry. My father told me, and I'm like way beyond your interview here. My father came to me at college and he said, "Tracy, I know you're in theater. I know you're studying drama. You want to be a director, but I really think you should be in TV and in journalism."
Oh, wow.
Because he knew how much I loved television and how I was curious.
Well,
you know, isn't that weird?
Well, and there you go. He nailed it. So pretty prescient, you know? We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest, Tracy. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.